It is Saturday, October 28th, 2006, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, our Weekend Geek news segment, followed possibly by a discussion with you, our listeners.
Geek Speak is a production of KUSP, Central Coast Public Radio, kusp.org. The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com.
Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today, we're doing Geek News, our Weekend Geek segment, like we call it, and that's basically a rundown of what we think about what's happening in tech for the week. And that, of course, is the week ending on October 28th, because that's today. The geeks today will be Miles and Sean. During the second half of the show, I believe we'll be taking your calls with questions and comments. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free 1-800-655-5877, or contact us now. Go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. Today, I do urge that you contact us via email, and I'll give out that information again when I invite your participation in about a half an hour. Again, the email, just go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. Geek Speak is supported by Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in cosmetic and family dentistry using digital technology for less radiation and offering one appointment crowns and veneers. For appointments and more information, 423-2447. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are geeks Miles Elam and Sean Cleveland. Miles Elam is the technical trainer at Surf Control, and Sean Cleveland is the technical marketing manager at NVIDIA. Geeks, welcome to Geek Speak.
Good morning, Lyle.
Oh, you're on mic two, not mic one. You look like you're on mic one, but yeah, you're on mic two. And you look beautiful today. Hi.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I'm on the wrong mic. Oh, well.
Yeah, it's fine. You know what? You're in the right spot, and we'll figure it out.
If Drew runs in, I'll move over.
Okay. No, I like being able to see you. It's fine. I mean, I know Drew's
over this way.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Closer to Miles.
So, Sean, I'll start with you on Geek on News today. So, please.
Well, you know, you've talked about it forever, and I know nothing about it, but I think maybe you guys do, because you're Mac heads. But...
Are we officially Mac heads?
You sound like an insult.
Mac heads?
Mac heads
is an insult.
I just said you're Mac heads. So, yeah. The Core 2 processor in MacBook Pro.
That's right. You know, you called it years ago, or I called it months ago.
Right.
Yeah, Apple released their new MacBook Pro, which is the high end of their laptops, and it's got the Core 2 Duo, which, does that make a difference?
Well, according to Apple, it gives a 37% increase in performance.
I believe it's 39% faster.
Oh, my God.
Do you think that's accurate?
Well, I don't know. It's probably accurate in one benchmark.
At least one
benchmark. That's kind of how marketing works, right?
Joining us via
lies,
phone.
Lies, damn lies, and benchmarks.
Joining us from via phone from Los Angeles, we have Alex Leas. Welcome.
Thanks, Kyle.
South of Los Angeles, actually.
South
of
Los Angeles.
Orange County, behind the orange curtain.
All right. Well, we'll forgive you that. Alex, thanks for joining us on such short notice on GeekSpeak today. What do you think about the new MacBook? You're a Mac head, right?
I'm looking at them. I'm not quite ready for my upgrade yet. I think my PowerBook is still holding on. But, yeah, I'm seeing an upgrade pretty soon. I kind of like the Core Duos in there. It looks nice.
Do you think that's a fair assessment that you're a Mac head?
I don't know. That kind of just sounds too much like being a cheesehead.
Yeah.
I like that.
I think what we should do, we should ask everyone that listens to GeekSpeak regularly that has a Macintosh to chip in for a fund to buy Sean a Mac. Because then first be able to rub it in his nose. He wouldn't be able to say no. It's a nice Intel.
I can picture it in my back room under a pile of books.
Yeah, right. You'd be using it
collecting
all
dust,
the time.
Upsetting you guys to no end.
That's true.
A waste of hardware.
Is we'll buy Maggie.
Actually, you know, Maggie would love an Apple.
You're just saying that because we all got together and bought my wife a book. Okay.
It would displace all the PCs in the house.
So the new MacBook is in, and we could talk more about it, but since none of us actually have seen one and played with it, it would be ridiculous. So let's go on to the next news story.
I'm surprised you haven't researched it.
You know,
Weren't you talking about upgrading?
It's that whole excessively busy job. I'm planning on getting one of these, actually.
Yeah, really?
Yeah. We've got...
Now, what do you have now?
I currently have a G4 PowerBook, PowerBook.
So what do you think the difference is between, you know, a G4 PowerPC and...
Well, I think it's going to be ridiculously faster. But yeah. I've seen the earlier Intels. I haven't bought a laptop, but I've gotten one of the iMacs and one of the Mac Minis, and they're great. And the one problem is that Adobe still has not released a native Photoshop.
Oh, really?
So when you do a lot of Photoshop work, but I think, and I haven't tested this yet, but I think that my laptop versus one of these new laptops, even though they'll have to run it in a virtual way, Photoshop will still run faster. Probably not some of the filters. But just in general. But I haven't tested that. I don't know that. And it's a concern because I do a lot of Photoshop work. But I do Photoshop work as a hobby, and I don't do a lot of Photoshop for work. What I do for work is other things, and having Intel is actually an important thing to do because that's where Mac is running.
I'm really surprised that Adobe has not released some sort of an update.
You know, I've got a friend hook in to QA, and they say it's extremely hard. They've been working on it for years.
Right. So that's a whole new way of...
It's a whole new world.
Is it about writing code, or is it the compiler is different?
I think what they did is they've optimized Photoshop. This is just an assumption, but I think they optimized Photoshop for the G4 processor, the G3 and the G4, so much so that they're not using as much native Apple libraries as most companies. So Apple has a great development suite, and when they migrated towards OS X, they made a step. And it's
why can't they take their x86 PC code base and import it?
Well, a couple months ago, I said, what's the fastest thing to do for Photoshop? And he said, get a Mac version, because it's more optimized, and put it on like a quad G5. That's the fastest way you can run it. And I was like, faster than like running a quad process, you know, AMD system? He's like, oh, yeah. Because it's so much, they've optimized it so much.
Right.
So they don't want to lose that strength,
right,
I think.
Right.
But this
actually, all the quad stuff on the PC, there is none. None of it's been released yet.
Yeah. Oh, actually, they're talking about dual.
But, you know, I hear it's in labs.
Well, let's get on to the next news story. Sean, I think I'll go with you.
Sean?
I'll look at Miles, point at Miles, and say, Sean. You know, on the radio, that sounded like I just was going back to Sean.
Yeah.
Okay, so Miles, I'll go to you, sir.
Top of the news for me was the release of Firefox 2.0, the web browser. And I love this browser. I was actually using a pre-release last week and had a tremendous thing happen to me. I want to share it with the audience, which is, as I was writing up the show...
Wait, will you share it with me too? Because I'm in the room and I don't want to take the headphones off.
Right, so okay. I was writing up the information for the show and was actually spending more time writing up the show than I usually do. And I'd written up a fair amount of data, but, you know, doing exactly what I shouldn't have, I didn't hit save. You know, on a regular basis, which everyone has learned that you always save regularly or else
so
you...
So the way we do this, the show updates, is we have a web form of an application that some genius made. And and it's basically one big form, and you put in a whole bunch of text, and you can save it multiple times. I allowed that
right,
feature.
Right, I just forgot to. Just
so you're talking about...
I was in the zone.
So you had a whole bunch of time invested in one field of a web browser submit form.
Basically.
That sounds bad, man.
I'm on my laptop, and all of a sudden, the system is just running out of memory probably not due to the browser, just everything's going wrong.
Hey, it's a Mac.
Who knows? Mm-hmm. And my browser crashes. So I've lost the last 45 minutes worth of work.
Right.
And I'm just, you know, livid and just beside myself. And then I start up the browser again, or rather while it's crashed, like, hey, Lyle, take a picture of the screenshot.
Right.
I mean, when I say take a picture, I mean take out his camera, take a picture of the text so I can have at least something left over. I start up the browser again. It prompts me to say, do you want to start a new session or restore the existing session? I go, okay, let me try restoring the existing session. Restores three browser windows, all the tabs associated with it, all the URLs that are in there, all the sites that I've logged into. It saves all the sessions, so I'm logged back into them, and it saved the text within the text boxes within those web pages, so I didn't lose anything.
So all the stuff you'd edited for 45 minutes.
I've seen this on my own system several times. Just if I restart the system without shutting it down or something, I come back, I can restore and get right back where it was. But it's funny you say this. This morning, I had built a system for a kitchen last night just so my wife could get email and watch the little one without, mm-hmm. you know, at the same time.
Yeah, you know.
Get a little life back.
The simple solution, just build another computer.
Just build another computer.
From parts in my room.
It crashed while she was writing a long email last night. And in Firefox 2.0. And so this morning I said, you know what? I think I can get it back. She's like, no, it's gone. So I didn't say anything. I was going to surprise her. Brought the machine up, you know, launched Firefox, and I just went to Google, my homepage. So I'm bummed.
It didn't work?
Did not work.
Well, what's up?
I was not able to restore my session.
You know, I'm wondering if they actually built it so it crashes for the first initial reversion once in a while. So people can go, oh, cool, because mine crashed on me, too, not too long ago.
And did you lose your session information?
It brought back the session, but it didn't fill in my form fields, which I was surprised that Miles, yours did, because, mine didn't bring back what I had, you know, just saved, but maybe there's a periodic point in time that it saved.
Yeah, it must be a timed thing, maybe. Mm. Yeah.
I would definitely take a look at those references and see what it does. So the thing that I like about Firefox, too, which I've liked for the alpha, beta, whatever, which I've run for a while, is built-in spell checking,
mm-hmm.
which anyone who...
Oh, it's called, it's called session memory.
Session memory. For anyone who actually knows, like, communicates with me via text, they know that having spell assistance is a useful
right
thing.
To put this into context, I knew Lyle for about 3 years before he sent me an email that had no errors in it.
You know, I've been pretty good about using spell check in my emails lately. But it's difficult online. So I'll be filling out something. I do a lot of wiki work in my job. And what I'll do is I'll take my email client and I'll pop up a new window and I'll write everything inside that, make sure it's all spelled correctly, and I'll copy it and paste it into Firefox.
But the great thing is...
So this removes that entire step.
The great thing, though, is it doesn't mean that you have to go in and say, all right, spell check these things on this page. It's simply, as you're typing, it underlines. Just like if you're using Microsoft Word.
Who owns that patent, do you think? Auto-underlining. And, you know, the thing is...
No idea.
Most Mac users might not know this, but if you... The contextual menu that you normally can bring up with a right mouse button, which you can't do on the Macintosh because there's normally not a right mouse button, though you can hold down the control button and click. So if you're using Firefox and you're typing away and you've put in the phrase, you know, geek, and it's underlined it in red, you can then find out what the spelling error is by right-clicking or control-clicking on a Mac that word, and it will come up with suggestions from the dictionary of what the word might be. So it's very convenient.
Or add to your own custom dictionary.
So that restore feature, it was called session memory. When the browser is reopened, it brings back a set of web pages that were in use when it was last closed. Supposedly, or according to Mozilla, this Firefox 2 has better security. It has a new interface theme and more security protection against built-in phishing. So
yeah.
That's good.
That's actually pretty cool. I've seen that actually in action.
Oh, really?
I specifically wanted to test that out, and I dug up an old PayPal spoofed email and clicked on the link to see what happens, and it brought it up, and it said, brought up this little warning. And I think they started doing that actually before 2.0. I think they started putting it into the 1.5 series towards the end.
That's great.
I've seen that happen. And so that was pretty cool. And another thing they also did regarding security that is probably going to annoy a few people, but you know, it threw me at first because I kept just hitting enter to accept the prompt, the default for the prompt, when I had a certificate that was not quite matching the domain name.
Mm-hmm.
It normally defaults to okay. and they changed now so it defaults to cancel. So you have to consciously go and say okay, which a lot of browsers are starting to do.
Great.
Yeah, and for folks to know, a certificate is a way for a server to positively identify yourself. It's like going to a store and showing your personal ID, like showing your driver's license or your passport.
And for people that set up their own web servers, it's very common for us to want to use security but not spend the $150 it takes to sign it. So we're always dealing with saying okay to certs that aren't actually valid. Yeah. Sean?
Yeah, you can also import RSS feeds now, which is kind of neat.
Well, you could always import. What does that mean exactly?
It now offers a feed list view.
Oh, yeah,
title
right. I've seen
and,
it in the
and first lines.
It's actually quite nice.
I haven't tried it yet, but I'm going to. And now the close button has been moved from the upper right-hand corner of the browser for every tab into each tab.
Right. Very Safari-ish. For those of you, I mean, if you want to try RSS, of course, you can do the GeekSpeak RSS because we,
yes, we do.
Host all,
yeah,
our, all our shows that are available via audio download. Let's go to the next news story. Alex, would you like to take it?
Well, you guys just took both of the ones I was thinking about talking about. You know, you got the Mac guy and the guy who loves Firefox, and you took both the stories.
So, okay, what's going on for you in development? What are you using lately for programming? Are you using...
programming? I don't program anymore.
No, not at all?
About? Well, occasionally, but...
So what's new in the security world?
I'm hanging up on Alex.
New in the security world? Well, Firefox came out with it.
Actually, with regard to the phishing, what I thought was interesting was that both IE7 and Firefox, so the two major browsers that are out there now have anti-phishing protection. And so I'm wondering if that really will have a positive impact on the Internet at large, whether people are going to be adopting those browsers fast enough and that they're going to be effective enough to really put a stop to, or if not put a stop to, significantly reduce.
Isn't this just another card play by the browsers? I mean, isn't it when they do this, then aren't the phishing people going to get smarter? I mean, how are they doing the detection?
Except for the fact that the browsers weren't really doing anything about it beforehand.
So at least they're attempting now.
Right. So now the war is actually beginning as opposed to before it was just a one-sided artillery strike.
I mean, it will have an effect. It's not going to be absolute, but I'm sure it will cut down immensely.
Great.
I mean, there's going to be people who are going to click, and if it's already been identified in some database, that's going to be stopped. So, I mean, it's going to have some positive effect, I think.
But then people, of course, have to read the dialog boxes that come up in their browser. Oh, we're screwed.
Right, but it usually they've been pretty good at making it really apparent. You know, this is bad. Don't do this. And yeah, I think people have gotten a little bit paranoid now, you know, healthy paranoia, which I think is good.
Let's keep talking about security. Microsoft released Windows Defender this week.
What is Windows Defender?
So Windows Defender is their spyware protection software, which is free to anybody with a validated version of Windows XP. And you just go to Microsoft.com/Defender. And it's actually a pretty decent little application.
So this means if you've pirated your Windows XP, you're borrowed friends and stuff like that,
you'll get the guarantee. You'll need to install the Microsoft guarantee.
Or the Genuine Advantage.
Genuine Advantage, that's what it is, yes. And and then if you don't pass muster, it'll tell you, it'll annoy you to buy the real version.
And then shut down your computer, and you get a knock at the door.
But Windows Defender features real-time protection. It's a monitoring system that recommends actions against spyware when it's detected and supposedly minimizes interruptions so you can stay productive. But you know, it's not a bad little application. And we've always talked about having multiple security apps. Don't just rely on one. Don't be afraid to install multiple. And so I've been using AVG. They, you know, for my antivirus, we've always talked about using AVG antivirus. Well, they also have antivirus or anti-spyware software too. So it's not a bad combination. It's all free. AVG antivirus, AVG spyware removal, which actually found a bunch of stuff on my own computer. I was really surprised. Yeah, worked really well. And then Windows Defender, and it's not a bad suite. I haven't done a lot of testing, so I can't talk about it in depth, but all this is new this last week.
And if you want to spend a little money, you can also get options such as OS X that comes free with when you buy a Mac, and that will stop most viruses.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I should say it's just a matter.
No, it's just a matter of time. But the other thing we should say is that we suggest AVG a lot. There's a whole bunch of other products out there.
There's also Free Avast.
There's some paid products too.
Mm-hmm. So there's Norton. There's McAfee.
So you know, if you got on a Mac and you're safe, for now. But when you're hit, well, you're unprotected.
Oh,
right?
Man, it's going to be scary. So the reason I brought up that there's paid too, I want people to really understand that there's antivirus, which is important. Almost everybody has that at this point. And if you don't have it, you're being very risky if you're on a Windows machine. And then there's also spyware removal. And this is getting more and more important with different phishing scams that trick you into installing these things, but also with some viruses that do the installation of these that kind of take over your computer. So you have to get the second thing, which is called spy removal apps, right? Is that the best term for them? Okay, anyway.
No, malware. Yeah, malware apps. So yeah. Something that I just wanted to also give as a warning, if you have a DSL or cable connection and you are not connecting up through one of those DSL or home gateway kits, yeah. If you're connecting your computer directly to the cable modem or DSL modem, and you do not have an antivirus, if you do not have antivirus software installed and you're on a Windows machine,
you have
pretty much assume that you have a compromised computer.
Okay,
you need to get that cleaned off.
So I got a DSL router from my DSL provider, and that came with actual, it was a built-in router inside it too. It's a DSL modem, wireless hub, and a router. Am I safe?
Yes.
If it's updated.
That will.
How do I know if
actually,
it's,
you know,
if that piece of equipment
firewall,
is direct or not?
Yeah, a firewall, it's good to update if you just bought it. Just make sure you have the latest.
When you're connecting your computer up to it, if the thing that you're connecting up to has four ports that you can connect up to, you're safe.
You're relatively safe.
If it has only one, then you're at risk.
Then you do not have a firewall. Yeah.
Okay. And if the
and
other
and
way
the problem is the ports, making sure that the ports are closed that a lot of these viruses use, which is why an update is important. If you've got an older firewall, the manufacturer actually does go back and patch the firewall to fight against this stuff. So worth looking into.
All right.
D-Link, Netgear, all those companies usually put out updates for their firewall, and look into that.
Speaking of compromised systems, I mean, there's been a recent jump in spam lately. I don't know if you guys have noticed it.
Oh, we've noticed it in my company.
Yeah. Well, you know what they're actually, Symantec is attributing that to, is compromised systems, the botnets. And one of the things that this malware will do is it will take over your system, but it'll just sit quietly until it's called upon to go and send spam. And suddenly you're adding to the spam that's going out into the internet. So it's another good reason to take care of, you know, getting some good malware detection software.
Yeah, a little bit of trivia. I recently met a spammer, or actually a group of spammers, in a social gathering.
Did you hit them and beat them?
No, I actually had a civil conversation with them, asking them different things, like what, you know, which things are hard for them, which things are easy for them. And turns out that Hotmail.com, which has historically been a hotbed of spam, an easy way of sending it, a couple of weeks ago was something. They made a change on the Hotmail servers, completely shut down the spammers. It was not even worth it. So I'm wondering if this may even be a response to that, just saying we've lost that revenue, we need to make it up somehow, let's do the buckshot.
Yeah, that could be.
Makes sense, I guess. I think we need to take that center of the show break and invite people to call in. Though today we're going to be kind of random on whether we're taking calls because we don't have a phone screener. I neglected to set that up. So if you'd like to call in, you're welcome to, but beware that it could be sloppy. So GeekSpeak is supported by Business with Pleasure, a full-service business center in Scotts Valley, offering computer rentals, printing, design, shipping, delivered office supplies, notary public, and more. Information is online at businesswithpleasure.com. You listen to GeekSpeak. We are taking your calls, kind of. But if you'd really like to get your question answered, please feel free to email us. Go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. GeekSpeak is supported by Cruise.io Internet, offering DSL broadband, computer rentals, and tune-ups. Cruise.io has retail stores in downtown Santa Cruz and Watsonville. More information can be found at cruise.io.com or by calling 459-6301. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KSP. You're listening to GeekSpeak. My name's Lyle Troxell. The geeks today are Miles Elam, Sean Cleveland, and Alex Leas. We also have Dee Dee backing us up on AIM. And we're going to take a call randomly. Welcome to GeekSpeak. You're on air.
Yeah, what do you think of the Veritech line of ultra-portables?
Does any of you know the Veritech line of ultra-portables?
Oh, God.
We'll do a little bit of research right now. Where are you calling from?
Santa Cruz.
And your first name?
Bob.
Hi, Bob. Well, thank you for calling very much.
A-V-E-R-A-T-E-C.
Are you asking because you're about to make a purchase?
They're very low cost. They're 10.6-inch screens, ultra-portables, mm-hmm. 733 megahertz processors, $1,100. With a gigabit of memory upgradable to 2.
That's too expensive.
Well, I think these are rugged, right?
Oh, these are rugged cases. These are like waterproof and such.
Isn't that correct?
No, no.
Oh, that's no, very what's the website?
AVERATEC.com.
I think that's too expensive.
For an ultra-portable.
Well, yeah. I mean, it doesn't have a CD drive, probably.
Yes, it does. Actually, it's very well equipped, an 80-gigabit hard drive.
Yeah, but it's got a 700 megahertz processor.
Right.
I'm a little concerned.
It has a low-end processor. Can that handle Vista?
I would doubt it. But the thing is, are you looking to... Do you want to make sure you have a Vista machine?
I have to upgrade to Vista.
Yeah.
They're coming out with Vista officially January.
The only reason I'm saying it's too much is that the MacBooks, which, you know, theoretically, or the power, the MacBooks, are the iBooks, excuse me, the lower end Apple laptops, which would theoretically be more expensive than an ultra portable Windows, run $1,000.
How big a screen?
I believe that's a 12-inch screen.
I kind of want to get
ultra portables are.
You want
really small.
Yeah, without shelling out for a $3,000 Fujitsu Lightbook. But it's got a DVD burner.
Yeah.
It's not a bad little machine as I look at the specs. It's a Taiwan company with a American operation.
Yeah, but, you know,
in
most,
Irvine, I think.
Most notebooks are only made at like 3 plants across in the world. And then they're sent out to, they're made for different companies.
Sure.
So it's, you know, it doesn't mean a whole lot.
Right. Can this thing handle Vista, Sean?
Can it handle Vista? I've been told that you need a gigabyte of memory or of RAM, I'm sorry, for Vista. So it can handle Vista.
It
can be upgradable to 2 gigabytes.
You should contact the company. In fact, I'm glad that we brought this up because as of Thursday, if you buy a computer, you get a free upgrade coupon to Vista.
Yeah.
Now, companies don't have to do that. A lot of them are, and I think competition will drive all of them to do this. But they could charge you for half the cost, or just maybe shipping to get you the copy. But I guess the holiday season is upon us, so from now and through March 15th, there should be an upgrade path to Vista. And if you don't see a Vista Ready sticker on the product material or the website for any notebook or PC that you buy, then you need to question whether it can run Vista. And the problem is the graphics. The integrated graphics is very important for Vista because Vista is a full 3D interface, and you may not be able, even if it does run Vista, you may not be able to take advantage of all of the Aero features of Vista, which is the 3D beautiful interface with the transparent windows. If you want the full experience,
what do you need for Vista in terms of memory and processor?
I think for that fancy interface, you need at least 256 megs of dedicated graphics memory. And the problem with notebooks is they use integrated graphics, but they share system memory. So if you've got a gig on the notebook of memory, well, then let's say it's sharing 256 megs of that. That's 256 megs less memory for the system.
Right.
And the OS needs at least half a gig, 512 megs. In fact, I think it needs more than that. So it's just no way that you will be able to use all of the features of Vista. And Vista comes with a little application called WinSat, and it's this benchmarking utility that tests your hard drive performance, your graphics, 3D and 2D, your processor, your memory, and it gives a score. And you may score a 5 for your CPU and only a 2 for your graphics.
Okay.
And you need a 3. And then let's say you score a 5 for everything and you only score a 2 on graphics. Well, the whole system is rated a 2. That's the way it's going to work. And then you need a 3 to use the advanced features of Vista, which means it'll be deactivated. And you'll be running Vista, but it'll look like Windows XP.
Wow. So 1 gig is functional, 2 gigs is minimal to have full features.
With a good graphics card.
Well, yeah. What okay. I would do, but the key here is if it's got integrated graphics, it's got to have its own memory. So when I'm looking at the 1100 series of the 10-inch model, it says Intel Extreme Graphics 2 technology with up to 128 megs of shared memory. So that is not going to run Vista in all its glory.
Okay, what kind of a processor would be the minimum that one would need to run Vista robustly?
So are you talking about a CPU or a graphics processor?
The CPU. The graphics processor is, of course, another element that I'm not totally familiar with in terms of necessity to run smoothly with multiple applications.
I would, if you're going to buy a new notebook, a Core Duo or Core 2 Duo, Intel, or on the Athlon 64 mobile, either of those should be fine for CPU. I would be wary of the Celeron. If you get a Celeron-based notebook, it's going to be a lot cheaper, but you may have some performance issues for sure.
Thank you so much for the call.
A Pentium M should be fine.
Thank you so much for the call. But, I think we're going to go on to the...
Make sure you get more than a gigahertz. But I would say at least a 1.8 gigahertz Pentium M.
There you go.
Thank you much.
Good luck. All right, so well, let's go ahead and do some more news. Dee Dee brought some good things through chat I want to mention, but I do want to go ahead and invite someone to call in. We do not have a screen caller, so we have nobody waiting on the line right now. If you call in, you get on air right now. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, 476-2800 or 1-800-655-5877. All right, let's go ahead and talk about Ubuntu. I saw Ubuntu run for the first time last night. I'd never seen it before. And it's a nice-looking operating system. I think it's definitely, there's some challenges in that it... You know, we've got a call. I'm going to go ahead and take the call.
Whoa.
This is KOSP. Welcome. You're on air at GeekSpeak.
Hey, this is Mike in Watsonville.
Hi, Mike. What's your question today?
I have a pirated version of Windows XP Pro on my desktop.
Okay.
And I wanted to go back to my Windows 98 second edition system.
Which you own.
It's giving me some, this other one's giving me a few problems, especially... Mm-hmm. when I go online. And the person that installed this thing took my code, my key code for 98. So I'm wondering, I have the two original disks. If I load those, if I...
You won't be able to install Windows 98 without your code.
And even if you had it, I really would recommend against it. Windows 98
it's just not supported anymore.
Yeah, Windows 98 has been what's called end-of-lifed by Microsoft. In other words, they're not doing any patches, any security updates, and there are known vulnerabilities with Windows 98.
Oh, okay.
So I would recommend against that and getting a newer
just,
operating
just
system.
Just get a newer version of XP.
Yeah, how much does XP cost?
I think I can get... Well, see, that's the thing.
It's expensive.
I can get an upgrade for less than $100.
Oh, I see. But you need your original serial
number.
But
I'm wondering if...
No.
Will it accept the upgrade with the pirated version on it?
With the Genuine Advantage, you can upgrade and get a serial for your existing version of Windows XP.
Does it cost less money than a full version?
I don't know.
I would do that. I would go with that path.
Okay, so it won't be a problem if I get an upgrade for it.
What you want to do is...
you don't need to upgrade. You just need a serial.
Yeah, you already have the operating system that you want to get.
Yeah.
It's just that you don't have a legal copy of it. So what you do is you go ahead and upgrade to the most recent stuff through Microsoft's site, and one of the things that's going to happen is this Genuine Advantage. Go ahead and say yes to that. It should probably detect that you have an illegal copy, or what they call is an illegal copy, and they will prompt you for buying something, and then you can resolve it by giving them money.
But the reason you were calling in was you were having trouble with Windows XP, right?
Well, it was, when I go online and stuff with it, some of the sites won't accept it. I guess it detects that it's an illegal version of it.
Mm.
Like at... when I try to upgrade my iPod, it won't upgrade it.
That's not because the copy is hacked. That's because of something else.
Oh, okay. Because It said that it had detected something with the operating system, and therefore it...
Yeah, that's not because it's an illegal copy. That's probably because there's something wrong with the operating system. When you boot your machine, is there a message that comes up that says you need to take advantage?
Yeah, it says this version is illegal.
Okay, right. So you follow that link. And it should take you to Microsoft's site and then show you what you need to do to make that legal.
Yeah.
And what it's doing is just giving you a serial. You won't have to upgrade. You already have the OS.
So what's happened is Microsoft's detected this is not a legal copy, and they're trying to make your experience less enjoyable until you pay for it and make it legal.
That's the thing. On their site, I think it said it's like over $100 to get the...
That's what it is.
Okay, well, I can get a legal copy of it from one of the stores here for like $90.
As an upgrade.
As an upgrade.
But you don't have a legal copy of 98 anymore.
So that's why that doesn't... No, I have a legal copy of 98.
Right, but since you don't have the serial number, you have no proof that you have that legal copy.
Oh, so the
because Microsoft doesn't trust you as a customer.
I have the original disk, but that doesn't matter.
That's right, because Microsoft doesn't trust you.
Okay.
So, that's the truth. That's what's going on, is that they don't trust their customers, and therefore they make a process in a place like this. But, so the other thing is, I don't know what the upgrade path is, but I wouldn't be surprised that you would have to uninstall Windows XP, install Windows 98, and then install XP again to do this.
I think
if you really want to be in a Microsoft environment, you might want to just bite the bullet and pay for the
I'm curious, what
advantage.
Do you use your computer for? What's your primary things?
I just do stuff around the house and stuff and surf the net and things like that.
Miles is going to suggest that you get a free operating system now. What is that free operating system called, Miles?
That free operating system which has just been released is Ubuntu, and
a new version of Ubuntu,
right? And
it's really
you
nice.
Should be able to get to the site and download it. But if you can't, you can always go to their website and find out information. They can mail you a copy.
Let's put it up on the GeekSpeak site to get Ubuntu. In about an hour, go to geekspeak.org, and there'll be a link from today's show about doing that process. But the thing is, it is a free operating system. It's going to be different than Windows. And some of the Windows applications will not work on it. Like you won't be able to run QuickBooks or something like that. So there's a few things. So you have to kind of get an assessment of what you have that you like on your machine.
Okay, can I run spreadsheets and things like that on it?
Yes. Mm-hmm. The full Office, the free version of an Office suite is there.
It's not actual Microsoft Excel. It's a clone of it.
But it will open Microsoft Excel documents.
Oh, okay.
But it's going to be a learning curve.
So it's a question of you can try it. It's free. If you don't like it, go back and buy Windows.
All right, good luck.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Bye.
Okay, we're taking calls with questions and comments of technology. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. I'm going to give those numbers out again as long as you call. The phone number is 476-2800. You know what? We got someone right now, so let's go ahead and take that. You're on air with Geek Speak. Welcome.
Hi.
Hi, do you have a question for us today?
Yeah, I do. It's the software related to XP, I guess, professional.
Okay, well, first off, what's your name?
Chris.
Chris, and where are you calling from?
Monterey.
Okay, Chris, what's the question about XP?
I bought a Toshiba laptop computer satellite, and it was installed, and it's worked well. And what happened is... I was doing something and somehow inadvertently changed the password, don't know what it is. And I have tried the different fixes of, going into safe mode.
So you've lost, your password for your machine.
Yes.
Okay.
And I want to know, is there a way to, and that, of course, the password is for the administrator. So
the administrator password on Windows XP you've lost, and you want to know if there's some way for you to recover and be
without having to wipe the disk clean and reinstall all the software.
There is a way to do this, and Sean is furrowing his brow in frustration of trying to remember.
Yeah, I think. So, do you have the hard drive hooked up to your new install?
It's not. He's not doing new install. He's just trying to get the access to his machine fully. He's not upgrading.
Oh, so you're locked out of Windows completely.
Yes, when I turn on the system, turn on the machine, I get the password screen, which I had never
and you never get
set
out.
Up. I never set it up before. I put a password in there, and then I guess when I rebooted or installed some other software, it now wants this password, and the password that I had set up originally doesn't work. So I've either changed it or
did
something.
Try logging in with a blank password. It's always a fun thing to try.
I did. Mean using no password at all?
Yeah. Because that's the default install configuration for Windows.
You're saying when you log in and it's asked for password, just hit...
Next,
yeah. I've done that, and it doesn't work.
Okay, so what you need to do is get the original CDs, I think. And, Sean, do you know how to do this?
Well, you know what you could do is go into safe mode.
And what happens when you try to go into safe mode?
So right when the system begins to boot, after you see the post screen where it tells you how much memory you have and the CPU and so on, right before you see the Windows logo screen is going to come up, you hit the F8 key. So just when you're starting to boot the system, just hit the F8 key, and that should bring up a boot menu. And then you can select to go into safe mode. And when you get to safe mode, there is a you can do a system restore. And what that does is it takes the system back to another date. So your Windows XP has various system restore points in time, and it should bring up a little calendar with all of the save states on different dates. And you can select a date when you knew that you didn't have a password, and it'll restore the system to that date. And you shouldn't have that password. Shouldn't have do the login anymore.
That's a good trick.
Can you just repeat those steps again? I got safe mode, and my pen was running out while I was trying to write this down.
So right when the system's going to boot into Windows, you hit the F8 key to bring up the boot menu.
And that's get into safe mode, right?
You get into safe mode, yeah.
Okay.
And then when you get into safe mode, a little dialog is going to come up, and it's going to say, click yes to continue to safe mode, or click no for system restore. And you want to click no, and then follow the system restore steps, and it'll walk you through it, and the little calendar will come up, and it'll... If you didn't disable system restore, some people do, because it does take processing cycles to use that, and it does extra work on your hard drive. So people want ultimate speed, they disable it. But
I haven't done that because I'm a firm believer in do no harm first, so I don't touch anything.
So just pick a date to restore the system to. But keep in mind that you're going to lose any data
until that point. Yeah,
yeah. May have.
What I'm trying to save is I bought a program to use my cell phone in a Motorola as a modem, wireless communication.
And you want to hold on to that?
And that stuff I installed probably, 3 weeks ago. This thing just happened 2 days ago.
Good luck, Chris. Thank you for the call.
All right. Thanks a lot.
So it sounds like you can just back it up a couple days and hopefully he'll be okay. All right. We're going to take a random call. Welcome to Geek Speak. What's your name?
Sarah in Santa Cruz.
Hi, Sarah. What's your question?
I have two questions, if you have time. One is that I have my daughter's HP Pavilion ZE4300 that is in working order, but it's not wireless. And I wonder if there's anything I can do to it to sell it. She got a new one and went to college and left this one with me.
Is it a laptop?
It is.
Go put it on eBay.
Uh-huh.
Or actually what I like, I think is even better for this kind of thing, is Craigslist. Craigslist is a free listing service. You put up your information.
Right, yes, I use that. Uh-huh.
Give an email address and wait till somebody says, I'll buy it. Now, to get the cost, how much you actually charge for it?
Uh-huh.
Do you have an eBay account?
Yes.
Okay, what I would do is I'd log in your eBay account, do a search for that kind of laptop.
Okay.
Then on the left-hand side, you're going to see a whole bunch of advanced searching features. Uh-huh. One of them is closed auctions. So then click that and do the search again, and you'll see a list. Okay. Is that Alex that's gone?
No, I'm still here.
Okay, good. Well, I guess she hung up on us or lost or something. That's okay, but I'll just finish what I was saying. You log in. You log into eBay, and you log in your account, you do a search for the product that you're interested on, how much price it is, and then you do the advanced search where you select closed auctions, and then you can see how much they've actually sold for, and that gives a pretty good example of what's going on. Welcome to Geek Speak. You're on air. Can I take your question?
I'm very embarrassed because I'm not trying to be on air. I'm trying to call Susan Freeman.
Go ahead and call back in about 20 minutes.
Thank you very much.
Well, I knew that was going to happen at some point because, of course, KOSP is a very busy place. But we are taking your calls, questions. I think we'll wrap up and not take any more calls because we do have a few more news items I'd like to talk about.
Actually, Maggie just walked in.
And Maggie walked in, and yes, hi, Maggie.
Can I call this if I can?
Go for it. Let's pass River around. So basically, we got a little baby in the air room now. We'll see if she'll talk. That'd be great. And Maggie, thank you. That'd be so great. You're welcome to call in with questions and comments of technology. The phone numbers are 476-2800. Toll free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, 1-800-655-5877. We are taking your calls with questions and comments of technology. Anything you'd like to call in with, 476-2800 or 1-800-655-5877. So, Miles, suggesting to someone to go transfer to Ubuntu because they're having problems with Windows, the problem that I had with it is Ubuntu is similar to Windows and similar to Mac, and I'm familiar very much with both those, but it's going to take me a little bit of time to get comfortable. And if you're really comfortable in either of those environments, isn't that a reason not to do it? Or do you feel that that's just a hurdle you have to do with learning technology? What's your thought?
Well, anything that comes up is going to be new. I mean, if we told him to wait for Windows Vista, it would be something new that he would have to relearn. So that, I don't know if I'd agree with that argument. With regard to Ubuntu's technical merits, I think that it's a safer environment to be on than Windows, especially if you're browsing the net. And if his predominant use of it is going to be web browsing, email, maybe some spreadsheet applications. That's stuff that really is very generic. It doesn't matter which operating system you're using. It doesn't matter if you're using a Mac or Windows or Linux in this case.
Okay. And the learning curve doesn't concern
right.
you that
and,
much.
And price was an issue for him. So that's why I was suggesting give it a shot. It's free. So if it doesn't work out, no harm, no foul.
All right. That's fair enough. We're taking your calls with questions and comments of technology. Maggie Cleveland is waiting to take your call. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. The Geeks of the Day are Miles Elam, Sean Cleveland, and from Orange County, Alex Lias. And, of course, Dee Dee's backing us up through AIM. So we can take anything you'd like to ask us. The phone numbers again, 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Oh, by the way, I'm Lyle Troxell. Listen each Tuesday and Thursday at 7:33 a.m. and 5:33 p.m. for Life in the Fast Lane with Kelly O'Brien. She'll keep you up to date with the latest from the world of alternative fuels, fuel efficiency, and how to avoid the dead end of oil dependency. Plus, if you have questions or comments for Kelly, you can phone her on the KOSP comment line right now and leave them. 1-888-549-6421. That's Life in the Fast Lane, Tuesdays and Thursdays at 7:33 a.m. and 5:33 p.m. right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP. We have a call, I'm assuming. So let's go ahead and take it. Welcome to Geek Speak. What's your question?
Hello. My question is about the Windows XP 64 digit.
Can you please turn down your radio?
Okay.
And the Windows XP, I'm sorry, go on.
64-digit version.
The 64-bit version of Windows, okay.
And I just recently installed a trial version of that XP, and I have some compatibility problem with Word.
Oh, really?
It's very weird.
And Sean, what do you think?
Yeah, Word should work. And any 32-bit app should work just fine within Windows 64-bit.
Yeah, when I installed that new OS, then it had some jumpy time, and I adjust the BIOS to adjust the voltage level of my RAM and CPU, and after that, it's okay.
Really?
Yeah, it takes me about a week to follow the details about the manufacturer menu to adjust the voltage.
Yeah, what made you think of that? That's interesting that you adjusted the voltages for software.
AMD, and I need a dual-core operation system.
Mm-hmm.
So I have nowhere to ask. Everybody don't have that experience except...
Yeah, well, hopefully you didn't increase it too much because... That could reduce the lifespan of the hardware because you're overvolting it.
Actually, I overclock it. Actually,
yes, it's common practice though. Overclocking is really big in the enthusiast community.
Yeah,
is it a safe thing to do?
For the most part, it depends on how hard you push your hardware. The harder you push it, the more reduced the lifespan of the hardware will be.
Yeah, it create a lot of heat.
I think we're going to go on because this
now,
is.
Now, I was going to recommend,
yeah,
just real quick,
make one recommendation,
with Microsoft Office, if you're having problems with it, make sure you've got the latest updates.
Actually, I update all the patches.
Including Office?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's really important, especially when moving to a new OS like 64-bit.
Yeah. And I went run Word for a while, and after maybe a dozen of operations, like save, copy, paste.
That's when it fails?
It just crashed.
Yeah, have you tried installing Word after?
Uh-huh.
I mean, yeah, I guess you had to. I think it's an unusual problem you're happening. I would definitely make sure you have all the updates. But other than that, I'm a little concerned about the overclocking. It does make sense to me that if your machine's a little hairy, that you're going to run into problems sometimes. Good luck with the problem, and I'm sorry that I'm going to cut you off here, but we're going to take one more question here today on GeekSpeak.
Hey, you go to geekspeak.org and send an email.
Yeah,
I can help you that way.
Sean knows how to overclock, that's for sure. All right, we have from, Lori, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Thank you. I'm running Firefox. My son put it on when Internet Explorer just totally messed up a couple of years ago. And when I run the spy bot, search and destroy,
yes,
it will immunize for Internet Explorer, but not for Firefox. Is there any way around that? And then the other question I have is about Alienware.
Miles, do you know what she means by... what it means by this?
What will happen is that SpyBot will set up in the registry telling Internet Explorer to not set cookies for certain known spyware
items. Okay.
And so that doesn't do it for Firefox. With Firefox, what I can recommend, though, especially with Firefox 2.0, they have some enhanced privacy features in there. You can have it do one of two things. You can either have it not keep persistent cookies, or there's another setting which allows you to delete private data every time you close the browser. So every time you start the browser, it's a completely blank slate.
Okay.
And that's available when you go to the Firefox preferences.
And that kind of does what the other thing
tools
is doing.
Options,
to some degree,
Windows
it does. And the only problem with that was if you're using Firefox for your web email client, it'll erase that every time. But it's probably a good thing to do if you want to be protective on this stuff. I don't personally do it this.
Okay.
I'm also thinking that what it's doing, a plugin is probably available for Firefox that does do the same features as like SpyBot's thing. And plugins are extensions to Firefox. There's a whole bunch of them. And if you go into Firefox, go to Extensions, and then say View More, you'll go to a web page, and there's probably a whole bunch of security ones. Just read through there and see which ones are popular, and you'll probably get the same kind of service through Firefox.
Okay.
Thank you so much for the call. Thank you.
I have that one question about Alienware.
What's the question?
Do you think the price is going to come down now? Isn't it Dell that bought them?
Yeah, they were purchased recently. I don't think the price is going to come remarkably down.
No,
because
way.
Because they're targeted for a very high-end market.
Dell bought them because they are extreme enthusiasts. They build extreme enthusiast systems.
And people buy that.
They're bigger, better, faster.
They are better
they
and faster.
They guarantee faster, that's for sure.
Thank you so much for the call. And thank you, geeks, for joining me today on GeekSpeak. Alex Leas in Orange County, Miles Elam here, and Sean Cleveland. And, of course, Maggie for coming in and saving us with phones. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
My name is Lyle Troxell, and I'll be back next week, as we are every week on GeekSpeak. GeekSpeak is supported by... GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used by permission. GeekSpeak is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP, Santa Cruz, KBDH, San Ardo, on the web at kusp.org. Coming up next is Castle College with Susan Freeman, but first, the Slow County Report. For KUSP and for GeekSpeak, I'm Lyle Troxell. See you next week.